Hello and welcome to Weekend Programming here on Radio Prague with me, Jan Wellinger. Coming up in today's program, we'll have a new edition of Czech History with Jan Richter. Jan will be talking to Igor Lukes, a Czech-born professor of history at Boston University. He'll be talking about a new book that looks at the U.S. role in the struggle between communism and democracy in post-war Czechoslovakia. So be sure to stay tuned for that. That's what we begin with. That'll be followed by another edition of Czech Life, which looks at parenting in the Czech Republic today. And, of course, by our long-running series From the Archives with David Vaughan. Let's get started, though, with Czech history. And Jan talks to Igor Lukes, Czech-born professor of history at Boston University.
Immediately after the end of the Second World War, Czechoslovakia became a testing ground in the contest between democracy and communism. In Prague, the United States was hoping to challenge Stalin's aim of including the country within the Soviet Empire by supporting Czech and Slovak Democrats in their uneven struggle against the communists. In his new book entitled On the Edge of the Cold War, American Diplomats and Spies in Postwar Prague, Boston University professor of history Igor Lukes explores the U.S. efforts to counter the communist offensive in Czechoslovakia and arrives at the conclusion that the half-hearted and even amateurish attempts by U.S. diplomats in Prague were doomed to failure. In his book, Igor Lukes argues against the belief popular among some Czechs that the Western Allies left Czechoslovakia to Stalin without putting up a fight. In fact, says Professor Lukes, the Americans thought that preventing the country from becoming a Soviet satellite could put a stopper to Stalin's ambitions.
They certainly thought that Czechoslovakia was the one part of Central Europe where Stalin could be challenged. They had no illusion that one could challenge Stalin in Poland, for instance. Nobody could challenge Stalin in the Balkans. It was too far. Nobody could challenge Stalin in Hungary. After all, Hungary was on the wrong side of the war. But Czechoslovakia had an excellent reputation. It was perceived as a country for the founding of which the Americans were somehow indirectly responsible. It was believed that President Wilson had contributed to it. Whether it was true or not, that's a different issue. And so they were certainly determined not to play, not to be passive in post-war Prague. On the contrary, they wanted to be active, they wanted to be energetic, and they believed that by being energetic, they would first advance the interests of the United States, secondly, they would advance the interests of Czech democracy, and thirdly, they might even be able to prevent an escalation of what then was growing into what later on would be called the Cold War, because Stalin would be somehow taught a lesson that you could have this country, you can have that country, but you cannot have all the countries. And Czechoslovakia seemed to be the country where Stalin could be legitimately challenged.
To challenge the communist menace looming over Czechoslovakia, the U.S. State Department sent an experienced man to head the American embassy in Prague. Lawrence Steinhardt had first-hand experience with the Soviet regime as he served as the U.S. ambassador to Moscow between 1939 and 1942.
When he launched his diplomatic career as, I think, the youngest American minister then in Stockholm in 1933, he was an up-and-coming rising star of the diplomatic service. When he then moved to Peru, it wasn't really all that famous. Peru, after all, is not the center of the universe. On the other hand, he was no longer a minister. He was now ambassador. And when then from Peru he was sent to Moscow, and then in 1939, it seemed that here was the man who really controlled his career and who was destined to rise higher and ever higher. And after all, he came to Moscow, he predicted the signing of the Stalin-Hitler Pact. All of this was terrifically successful. And he, unlike many others who maintained illusions about the nature of Stalinism, he quickly saw through the facade. And he said, this is the worst regime ever created invented by man. This is a hoax.
But Lorenz Steinhardt's career in diplomacy suffered a major setback when Nazi Germany attacked the Soviet Union and turned Stalin into America's ally rather than foe.
The president started bypassing him. He started communicating with Stalin not via the embassy but via direct emissaries such as Harry Hopkins. And Steinhardt felt that he had been marginalized. And this is the time, I think, when he starts thinking that he would have to refocus on his own finances, on his own life. He starts again making money. He has mistresses.
As Igor Lukács chronicles in his book, the U.S. Embassy in Prague more often than not misread and misinterpreted some of the crucial events taking place after the war. Ambassador Steinhardt's dispatches were over-optimistic and grossly underestimated the communist determination to seize the country. The U.S. mission had intelligence agents operating in Czechoslovakia, but they failed spectacularly face-to-face with Soviet and Soviet-trained intelligence officers.
The Americans were completely naive, and their people mistook gathering information during dinner parties for espionage. So they had, for instance, no clandestine services here at all. Their spies were people who went to dinner parties and would, you know, come up to someone after the dinner had been served, and they would say, well, how is it going? What can you tell me? Well, they told them, you know, Zenkel said this and Monsignor Schrammeck said something else. And so things seemed going well because Monsignor Schrammeck said so. But of course, then it turned out that Monsignor Schrammeck didn't really know all that much. And that people like Rudolf Slansky or Karel Schwab and people who actually ran the opponents' intelligence services, they used different methods and they were much more ruthless and much more sophisticated. So the Americans suffered a strategic defeat when it came to intelligence.
As the communists were gaining more power, Czechoslovakia was sinking deeper and deeper into the Soviet sphere of influence. In the summer of 1947, the country passed what Professor Lukács called the point of no return. Under extreme Soviet pressure, the government backtracked on its previous decision and pulled out of the Marshall Plan, a U.S. program designed to help rebuild European countries destroyed by the war. Taking part would establish strong ties with Washington, which was something Moscow did not want to happen. When the Czech buckled under pressure from Stalin, the U.S. did not help.
They did very little. And in fact, yet again, Steinhardt wasn't in the embassy when this happened. And later on, he actually referred to the reversal of the Czech decision regarding the Marshall Plan as the one episode where he had clear evidence to the effect that the Czechs were in fact forced to reverse their original decision. But he had made no attempt to either help the Czechs resist the pressure to reverse, and secondly, he himself very quickly put the situation into a new and sort of weirdly optimistic, rosy context and claimed that this was a tactical mistake for Stalin and the communists and that very quickly the Democrats would in fact use this to beat them.
The question whether the communist coup of February 1948 could be prevented continues to haunt Czech society to this day. The communists won the semi-free elections 2 years prior, but were gradually losing public support. Pro-democratic forces hoped that after the subsequent elections scheduled for May 1948, the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia would have to adopt more moderate policies. But most people, including those working at the U.S. mission in Prague, failed to realize that Stalin would not give up. Just 2 months after the putsch that sealed Czechoslovakia on the wrong side of the Iron Curtain, Ambassador Steinhardt sent a cable to the State Department offering his view of the development. He wrote that the Czechs did nothing to prevent the communists from taking over and instead unrealistically relied on the help from the United States to do the work for them. Professor Lukács agrees that the responsibility ultimately falls on the Czech democratic elite, who misunderstood the gravity of the situation.
The Czech public, too, is responsible because they were so frightened of Germany in my opinion, it was an irrational fear, because in 1945, 46, 47, 48, Germany was an utterly crushed country. It was a country under foreign occupation. It was not a country that was in a position to rise from the ashes and yet again march with its troops around Wenceslas Square. That, I think, was completely irrational. But it's also true that the West contributed to the communist triumph in Prague, and I am often reminded of a quotation that I read in a book that described it was really a work of fiction. It described 1948, and somebody said that the Democrats had lost because they could hate their totalitarian enemy, but they had no one to love.
Historian Igor Lukesh was Jan Richter's guest in that edition of Czech History. Now we move on to Czech Life, which is a repeat from 2 years ago, hosted by Sara Borůvka, and the topic is parenting in the Czech Republic. And nearly 23 years have passed since the Velvet Revolution, and with the great political changes that it brought came many small but significant changes, of course, in people's personal lives. And one area that certainly was affected is parenting. Parents today, of course, have many more choices than under communism, which can be both an advantage and a disadvantage. So in this edition of Czech Life, Sara speaks to Czech mothers about their experiences, what they feel has changed since their own childhood, and also what they want to do differently than their parents.
Jenomže Josefkovi se nechtělo ani vstávat, ani jít do školky. To se mu bohužel stávalo skoro každé ráno. To taky známe, viď?
Helka Varháníková reads a fairy tale to her son Jachim, who is 4 years old, at the Prague Municipal Library. She and the father of her two sons work from home. Jachim also has a baby brother who is 7 months old. Helka, who became a mother when she was 30, is part of a new generation of parents here in the Czech Republic who were born during communism but are now raising their children in a free society. Helka says that her situation is very different to the one that her parents were in when they first started a family, and that those differences are also reflected in her style of parenting.
I think I try to be much more liberal when it comes to bringing my kids up. I think that my parents were much more strict, and I think in some cases it wasn't. I still feel that sometimes they were too strict, and so I try to do it differently. But then again, sometimes when it gets too hard, I think that maybe they're right, and that being stricter could make life easier sometimes. But then we've decided to do it this way, and I think it's better for the kids in general that they feel more relaxed, even though they sometimes say quite rough things to us. but I don't mind.
Under communism, Czechs often became parents at a very young age, which was sometimes connected to the fact that couples had a much better chance at getting their own flat when they were parents. Dr. Petra Vrtbovská is a child psychologist who works in Prague.
20 years ago, most of the young people would get married around their 20s, and they would have kids. As well, many, many of these kids would be, you know, not really wanted. Not unwanted, but not really wanted. It would just happen. A young lady would get pregnant. They would marry because of the child. And then they would have 1, 2, maybe 3 kids at a very young age. Because in communist regime, there was really nothing to decide. So young people, there was so little to show that you are grown up and you can make your own decision. So this was kind of only decision people could have. So most of them would go for family very soon.
Romana Hubková grew up under communism. She raised 2 sons who are now both in their 20s. Now in her 40s, she describes the experience of first becoming a parent.
I am a product of socialism. I finished my study, and in 1 month I was married. And after 1 year, I was mother. So I was mother in my 24 years. So I think I was very young mother, and in first 3-5 years, I felt more than like a child, than like a mother.
Of course, a lot of things in the Czech Republic have changed in the last 2 decades. The situation of parents today differs in many ways, not just in terms of the age at which Czechs become parents. Dr. Petra Vrtbovská again.
For instance, of course, what's really available now would be different schooling systems, so parents have got a choice in terms of what kind of school they would like to have for their kids, as well leisure time activities and different courses for kids are very available. So one of the features which I can observe is that some parents, most of the parents, are somehow a little bit too keen to get for their kids everything, you know. So kids would go to piano lessons, language lessons, sport lessons, and they have very full schedule. And so even, you know, very young kids at the age of 7, 8, 9, 10 have full diary of duties. I think this is a little bit too much.
Michaela Svobodová-Nehybová became a mother when she was 35 years old, just as she planned it. She says her experience is very different from that of her own parents.
I can see a lot of differences, that's for sure, because firstly, I think that parents now have much more information they can actually deal with, so they can compare much better what's done, how it can be done. There are also a lot of tools that can help you with kids actually when they are small and they are young. And from my point of view, it's much easier in some ways today. On the other hand, what also my parents said, and for instance, it's much dangerous now, you know, that parents are much more afraid of their kids to let them go alone to school, for instance.
Dr. Vrtbovská says that safety is definitely a top concern for parents today and maybe one of the things that changed for the worse after the end of communism.
Well, another thing which really changed and I think has got a big impact on the way people live now and children live now. You know, before 1989, the country was really pretty safe, you know. Communists were able to keep crime under control. And since the liberty came, there is much more openness to different situations which are not safe for kids. And it resulted in very different way of living for current families because, you know, when I was a kid, we spent most of the time outside on our own.
Mother of a 4-year-old Helka Varhaníková says she tries to be as liberal as she can be with her children. But even she says she probably wouldn't let them roam around outside as freely as she was able to when she was a kid.
I'd love to let them do that because I loved it as a kid. And we played on the street and outside in the courtyard between the houses. But now I think it's impossible, not just because of the cars, but also because nobody does it. So if you do it, you feel like you're an outcast because, like, when I was a kid, when my brother was little, he actually went to the kindergarten on his own. And when I was a kid, I went to the first year at school. So when I was six years old, I went to school on my own. Today, 10-year-old children still go with their parents because everybody's afraid. I really don't know what they're afraid of, but it's mostly cars, and that I understand. But it's probably also the feeling that nobody does it, so you shouldn't do it either.
One thing that has not changed, says Dr. Vrtbovská, is a strong emphasis on discipline in parenting, maybe connected to parents being very concerned with what other people may think of them if they see their children misbehave in public.
Czech parents also have always been, and I think that still continues, kind of very careful in terms of how their kids behave outside because they think that it's their kind of like window. So if kids don't behave, everyone thinks that parents are not good parents. So I don't think that really changed. You know, it seems that the Czech parents are ambitious in terms to show that their kids are perfect.
2 years ago, Dr. Vrtbovská worked as an advisor to the then Minister of Human Rights, Jamila Stehlíková, who wanted to raise awareness of the issue of physical violence being used to discipline children in the Czech Republic.
She took me to many different public discussions, and I was really shocked, you know, because usually, in most of the cases from the audience, parents would stand up and say, no, you know, your kids in Western countries are very misbehaving and it's because you are too loose with them and physical punishment is great. I was physically punished and look at me, how great person I am. So it hasn't changed.
I think that's true because I think that the Western Europe or the Western part of the world, it's much more focused on the kids, you know, much more pedocentric, I would call it, you know. We as Czech parents still don't know very well how to bring our kids to be more, I don't know, open to, you know, think much more on their own because we were used to be given some rules or some guidelines how to do things. And I think that still our generation still slightly tensed to this. So in some way, I think it's good to give kids some rules and some guidelines how to behave and to make them some, I don't know, case how to do it. But we could or we should sometimes, you know, to leave them a bit on their own, to have their own opinion, to find their own way how to do things.
I think it's changing now. It's definitely changing. I think that the older generation here expects people to be stricter to their kids. So my parents, for example, think that I'm not bringing my children up too well because I'm not strict enough. And I have a friend who lives in India. She has two kids in India. And it's the complete opposite there. They don't tell them off at all. They don't forbid them anything. And she found it very difficult to come back here for a month or something when she comes in the summer because she just lets the kids do what they want. But people stare at her and they tell her off for the way that her children behave. Older generation, I think. And they just behave as kids. They just play and run around and are a bit noisier than, you know, the average person is, but nothing too bad.
Michaela Svobodová-Nehybová and Halka Varháníková were talking there about the issue of setting boundaries. And what is the single biggest lesson a parent can learn? I put the question to Romana.
Love the children. I think it's the important thing.
And that edition of Czech Life was with Sara Borůvka looking at parenting here in the Czech Republic. If you'd like to comment, please do so by writing to us here at the station. The address is english@radio.cz. Or if you prefer, you can still send us an old-fashioned letter or postcard to our street address. It doesn't happen as often as it used to, but some people are still offline. And the address is Vinohradská 12, 12099, Prague 2, the Czech Republic. We're always very happy to hear from you. And as always, some of your comments may make it onto the air in our mailbox program, so do drop us a line. Now that we turn to our final feature for this day, which is another edition of our long-running series, now in reruns, From the Archives with David Vaughan.
The 17th of November 1989 did not begin dramatically. It was the 50th anniversary of the execution of 9 Prague students who had led protests in 1939 against the German occupation. Various officially sanctioned commemorations were taking place, and the centre of Prague was filled with students.
Kde jinde začít informaci o 17. listopadu 1989 než ve staroslavném Karolínu. Historická aula univerzity Karolínu.
Czechoslovak radio reported from the official ceremony in the morning at Charles University, where, as always on these occasions, it was the Socialist Youth Union that took center stage. But this was just a week after the fall of the Berlin Wall, and change was in the air.
Pod večer se pak přišly stovky chlapců a děvčat s kytkou a zapálenou svíčkou v ruce poklonit památce Jana Opletala do míst, kde v roce 1939 šel pohřební průvod jeho rakví.
Shromáždění a průvod. In the afternoon, thousands of students carrying flowers and candles joined a march along the route taken by the funeral procession of Jan Opletal, who had been shot and killed during the protests back in 1939. Again, Czechoslovak radio gave the impression that nothing out of the ordinary was happening.
Shromáždění a průvod uspořádala Pražská městská vysokoškolská rada.
But then the newsreader added one further sentence.
Podle posledních informací se slavnostních okamžiků pokoušejí někteří lidé zneužít k protisocialistickým provokacím.
Reports are coming in that certain people are attempting to abuse this solemn occasion for anti-socialist provocations. For certain people were in fact many thousands of students who had continued their peaceful march into the centre of Prague. Calling for democratic reform, they ended up in the street Národní třída, which links the National Theatre to Wenceslas Square. There, they were stopped, and riot police broke up the demonstration with unprecedented force. The next day, Czechoslovak radio, at the time still firmly in the hands of the regime, reported that 17 protesters and 7 policemen had been injured. Its report continued.
Už v průběhu této akce byly snahy učinit z ní demonstrativní vystoupení proti socialistickému společenskému zřízení.
In the course of the event, there were attempts to turn it into a demonstration against the socialist system, the Communist Party of Czechoslovakia and the government. This was confirmed as the situation developed, and in the evening the crowd, on the instigation of various people, headed towards the city centre. Peace and public order were breached. After repeated appeals, some of the people went away, but around 2,000 continued to demonstrate and behaved increasingly aggressively. In order to reinstate peace and order, police riot units were employed.
Obnovení pořádku a klidu zakročily pořádkové jednotky veřejné bezpečnosti.
As we can hear, Czechoslovak radio was not at the vanguard of the Velvet Revolution, and in the first dramatic days was broadcasting only the official version of events. But by November the 19th, with demonstrations in the streets continuing, a distinct shift in the radio's reporting could be detected. At 5 in the afternoon, Wenceslas Square was filled with people. It's hard to say, but I probably wouldn't be exaggerating if I said there were around 100,000 people here, mostly young people and children, but all generations were here. The participants were shouting slogans, discussing in groups. Their shouts and banners displayed their dissatisfaction. They were calling for political pluralism, free elections, dialogue, and radical reforms.
Svobodné volby, skutečný dialog a radikální reformy.
The language of this report contrasts dramatically with what the radio had previously been broadcasting. By now it was clear that major change was underway, even in Czechoslovak radio.
From the archives with David Vaughan brings us just about to the end of today's program. Quick reminder, you'll find more news, many more stories and features at our website. Radio.cz is the address to visit. Also, we are on Facebook and on Twitter, so you can take part in some of the discussion there about things going on in the Czech Republic. I'm Jan Wellinger. For all of us here at the station, thanks for joining us this day and enjoy the rest of your weekend.